Brings us to the public hearing on, oh crap.
Good afternoon, Commissioner, members of the commission. And I just want to go over your evaluation a little bit in general. Your evaluation this month contains the current information since your last meeting. In addition, what staff sent to you was also many of the figures and charts that you had last month. And if you call last month, really the presentation was pretty close to a public hearing type of a presentation. The commissioner allowed staff to present an abundance of information. So a lot of that will not be repeated today. At the same time, you have regulations. There's Chapter 270 in the back of your packet, as well as Chapter 1140 dealing with crab dredging. And you also have your public notice, and the public notice is about halfway through that process, right after the write-up on the Crab Management Advisory Committee meeting from June 17th. So with that, I think most of the staff emphasis is going to be looking at what we looked at last month with the commission, which is the reason for having what in the press was called a two-pronged approach, where the spawning age female crabs as of the previous winter, or as of March of 2014, when that survey ended, that there be some conservation afforded to those crabs, which has been typical. And the second part would be there are also juvenile crabs, and you can see up here in this column the juvenile crabs and 25 years worth of production or recruitment of juveniles. And I think that it becomes difficult to see which are the good and which are the best years, but this year at 198 million juveniles is an improvement from 111. So all things considered, I'm going to talk about predators in a minute. All things considered, the late summer, fall period should be an improvement. What really is driving the baywide request for a 10% reduction in harvest is this two-pronged approach, to pay attention to these juvenile crabs, which no one really has done that on purpose. This is a chance to do that. You heard last month that the Bay jurisdictions are now moving towards a July-to-July basis for management. The biggest problem we've had since 2007 when the Baywide Winter Dredge Survey was adopted as the premier survey is that the results, the earliest they've come out, is April the 7th. Now it's closer to late April, early May. So it's not very good for management to get those results while the fishery is already well underway. Another driving force is, of course, the low abundance of the spawning age female crabs that you can see in this column. 70 million is the threshold or the lower limit, and we are below that lower limit. That threshold was established in 2012. You can also see readily that there were other times where there was a depleted status, and you should know, I think, that the reason for not having management specifically directed at that depleted status, as we're asking today, is the science was not at that point yet. Back at that time, there was an effort from the Bi-State Blue Crab Committee, which had just started to set reference points, but it's nothing like we have today. So this is the first time that we've had a depleted status under the new assessment. The other thing to notice about a depleted status, and in general, the long-term harvest in the bay is 68 million to 70 million. And you can see that you really have to come all the way from up here in 1997. You have to come all the way down to these last 2 years here. You did have 62 million in 1999. The problem with that is there was overfishing. So overfishing was occurring. 34% is the upper limit of the exploitation fraction. So you come down to 2010 and 11, good solid years, and not overfishing. Actually, under the target in both years, the target is 25.5% removal just by fisheries on an annual basis. So I did want to go through that again, and here's a little closer look where you don't see all the years, but I think what's important here, and the commission has seen this last year, the rankings. So if you look at 2014, one is the highest rank out of 25 years, 25 is the lowest, at least for the total number of crabs, certainly on the lower end, in the lower quartile, getting close to the lower quartile. The juveniles are just a little bit below average, which is good. I mean, that's of all the shining moments, I think the juveniles are one this year because they're just about average over the time series, pretty close. Spawning age females, 27 out of 25. That means there's only 3 years that were lower, and you saw them just a moment ago. So that's problematic. What really is a thorn in the side to anyone who's in the industry, or it should be, is the harvest. 37 million pounds. That's it. That's Maryland, Potomac River, and Virginia. So I think last month staff mentioned that, yes, overfishing is not occurring, but at what price are you paying for that if you're in the industry when this is your total harvest, 37 million pounds? This does a little bit just to show you in the bright green. It's the baywide abundance through time, through the 25 years. You see the Maryland harvest. Some tracking there, and you can certainly see that Maryland and Virginia both, when the abundance is down, they track down as well. And you can see this text box. There have been six times that the exploitation threshold was exceeded, most recently in 2007. So the other good part is from 2008 until the present, that threshold hasn't been exceeded. But again, it's a harvest relationship that you have to look at too. This should counter a little bit of the information that was available once the survey was done in early May. And 24.7% of mature crabs in Maryland were part of the winter kill. And at that time, that seemed to be significant. You have to remember where most of the female crabs are, though, when you're talking about females. So most of the female crabs have left Maryland. They're overwintering either in the upper portion of Virginia. Some make it even a little bit further. So these two lines here give you the perspective of what overwintering mortality did, not to males and females, but to female crabs. And the bright green line is really looking at the female's abundance. And the black line is really looking at after Maryland overwintering mortality. Really, if you see below the red line here, you can see a little bit of an effect. But in general, there have been larger effects in the past with the overwintering with the dark line. Certainly back in the 1991 period, 2011, or 2010, pardon me. This gives you the baywide approach. So when this was done baywide, it only started in 2011, where Maryland and Virginia data are combined. And you see that 19% for the last year, you see it as low as 4%. So why is staff talking about a 10% reduction, but really meaning let's do something with the juvenile crabs, conservation, and if we can in the summertime, do something with the spawning age crabs? And the reason is by code, by law, the commission is charged with conservation management measures that will, and you've heard this many times, achieve the optimum yield. Staff doesn't think 37 million pounds for the Bay and 17.9 million pounds for Virginia is anywhere close to the optimum yield. And also the current reference points are actually based on maximum sustained yield, and optimum yield is lower than that. So, you know, the achieving part is not occurring. And that's important. That's important for the industry. It's important for everyone, really. The second part of this is I don't think there's really a choice to try to address the depleted condition, 68.5 million crabs, female spawning crabs, because the management plan is there to reverse any fishing practices, environmental stress, or habitat deterioration that negatively impacts either the short or long-term viability and sustainability. This is definitely short-term. We're looking later on today a little bit at a July 2014 to July 2015. That's short-term. There's been a lot of talk, and it's unbelievable to me the amount of information flow that there has been this year compared to other years from industry. I think some of the commission members probably are very aware of that. It can be awfully confusing because the suggestions aren't directional. For every suggestion or a bit of advice, there's counter advice and counter suggestions. But the one thing I think everyone can light on is predation. And there was a lot of talk last year about puppy drum, really 2012 as well. So staff wanted to let you know something about predation and put it in a light that it depends where you prefer to have a component of the ecosystem as to how you're about to view this information. So this is red drum, and what should jump out at everyone is that except for Delaware, pretty much many states had a spike, a tremendous spike in the recreational fisheries. Now, there are not a lot of direct ways to measure the recreational or commercial fishery for red drum because everyone's in a slot limit. So for us, our recreational fishery is 18 to 26, three fish, and for the commercial, 18 to 25, five fish. You can't tell a lot about what's going on with the stock that way. The B2s are the released fish. That's what MRIP, the NIP survey, does. It looks at the released fish. And this is a pretty good indicator of what was going on in 2012. There was a lot of puppy drum, a huge amount of puppy drum in Virginia. But what you see after that is that the puppy drum mature. They mature relatively quickly, half mature by age three, and they are starting to clear out of the systems. And by age five, they're mostly offshore. But in 2013, you see the rapid drop. Now, these are the recreational anglers being the census of what's going on with red drum. You will still see red drum around this year. But in most cases, North Carolina and Virginia are showing downturns pretty quickly, 2013. We don't have the 2014 data yet. Just at Virginia, you can see this again. This is total catch. We added the harvest, added the releases, put them together, and what you see is 2002 was pronounced, but nothing like 2012, and you see the drop in 2013. So if crabs are what you want in the ecosystem, that's your preference, then you're probably happy to see this information. Striped bass. This becomes more of a toss-up as to what occurs and what makes different groups happy. So if you look at the red line, you're seeing essentially our Chesapeake Bay and Seaside of Eastern Shore fishery, and it has dropped tremendously. This is catch again, so it's harvest plus releases, and you see a similar trend out in the ocean. And I think you know that the ASMSC is in August going to have a plan. It would be wise to think that plan's going forward, and it's going to ask for a 25% reduction from all the Atlantic coast states from recreational and commercial fisheries. Yes, we had a good 2011 year class in the Bay, but there were plenty of poor to average year classes before that. So striped bass are in decline, a predator of blue crab. Red drum, in decline, a predator of blue crab. Atlantic croaker, a predator of blue crab. And what we see there are commercial landings, which it spread out a little bit, but my recollection says 1996, which is not shown here, really started the abundance of Atlantic croaker, and it stayed abundant until a few years ago. But both the recreational and the commercial landings and catch have come down. I think this may be the last one, but striped bass catch in blue, and then what you saw before already was the red drum releases falling rapidly, indicating abundance is falling for red drum. Juvenile crabs are very important to the plan that the Baywide jurisdictions want to do for 2014-15, and this just gives you information that tells you when the maturity is reached. It also tells you that in the subsequent fisheries, after that March period when the winter dredge survey is open, you just have to wait to that late summer and fall, and those juveniles will be recruited to the fisheries and recruited to the first-time spawning events the following May. So that would be May of 2015 and July and August of 2015, which is very important. I'm going to talk a little bit about this, but I've asked Dr. Lipschitz to really go through most of this. I showed you the juveniles to indicate to you that after larvae are released or rubbed off, you have a few stages to go before you reach the juvenile crab. And here's where managers take their first step. They see what the juveniles are doing. But any plans or any thoughts on total management have to take into account that there's, once the zoea are pushed out to sea and out there for quite a long time, it's just a matter of waiting to see what type of abundance of megalopes come in and what type of juveniles, which are still vulnerable to natural mortality more so than larger crabs, what occurs there. So that's very important. We always have to keep in mind that it's not a straight management system. We are, you know, managers after the environment does the first step or two or three. So, Dr. Lipschitz, would you mind going through this and then your slides a little bit, maybe a little more detail?
Okay, sure. Good afternoon, Commissioner Bull and commissioners. Rob had asked me to basically talk a little bit about this and then look at some of the dynamics that we've been looking at in terms of the spawning stock and the juveniles from the dredge survey. Similarly to what I did 2 years ago when we had another concern in 2012 with the reduced numbers of females that we saw that year. So just to sort of finish up here and to make sure that there are no questions, or if there are questions that I can answer them, that if we go down here where Rob left off, so we have the juveniles, and of course we think that the primary habitat for those are seagrass beds, which we know have declined to a large degree, and they can also use other structured habitats like marsh debris and so on. Then after about a year and a half or so, then of course they mature. So that would be the following year, they're mating, and then we'll be in their third summer is when they will be actually spawning. Okay, so that is sort of the main thing I wanted to get out with this. And, of course, we know the females are migrating from Maryland and the upper parts of the tributaries down to the lower bay to spawn. So before I go to the next slide, I mean, are there any questions remaining as far as the life cycle? I really haven't given you much in detail, but.
Sure. Yes, Harrison. I guess I had a question here, and I apologize if it's not really appropriate, but while you have this up, what does the research or the data tell us about mortality associated with those various life stages? Is it available? Is that research available? Is that data available?
What, Well, we think we know what the overall natural mortality is for a species that lives approximately 5 years or can live 5 years. We think the mortality is probably about on the order of 50-60% or so of the stock every year. But we do know that for the juveniles, it's much higher. And it's also much more variable. So the juveniles are suffering twice that mortality rate. So that what you have is some form of density dependence. That is, you can start with juvenile abundance this high or this high, and they can both be cropped down to be somewhere near. You know, the highs will still be higher, but they won't be as high as they were before. So we know that, but it is extremely difficult to actually get a good number on that, because there's so many of them and because they're so widely dispersed. So, for instance, the way we've done it in the past, tried to do it, is you can actually, we've taken very small crabs and we've taken microwire tags that are actually numbered and inserted them into the swimming leg, the base of the swimming leg. It can be retained there without mortality. And then if we can recover them, we can know, it's like a tag recapture study, basically. We can recover them, we can know what the mortality rate is. Unfortunately, they're so widely dispersing that, and so abundant, that we can't tag enough of them to get a good estimate. We've literally, in a seagrass bed, tagged between 10 and 20,000 of them with those little microwire tags, and we're still unable to get large enough numbers to get a precise estimate of mortality. So, you know, basically what I can say is that twice the mortality or so of the adults is crude estimate. Now, the mortality offshore, remember that each female on average releases about 2 million larvae, and probably only 1% of those will come in. So a lot of the mortality going from spawning stock to juveniles is happening offshore, which is what Rob was referring to. We think that when we've tried to relate juvenile recruitment to the spawning stock, we have found that the spawning stock can explain about roughly a little over half of the variance. So that's good, but on the other hand, it means that almost half of the variance is unexplained, in the sense that it's due to environmental changes and predator-prey interactions and so on, just various things that are beyond our control. So it's a long, long-winded way of trying to explain that. But basically, we don't feel we have a precise enough. I think we have some estimates that are probably ballpark accurate, but our precision is like this on what it is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So I'm not sure how much detail you would want to have. I think basically this explains, or again sort of shows the process, that there's probably about a so if the megalopia, the post larvae, are coming back into the bay starting sometime in late July, mid to late July is usually about the earliest, and then they come in as late as early November. So we have cohorts that are coming in during that time. So those cohorts then are the ones that are being settling in seagrass. It's those young juveniles that are being hit hard by puppy drum, by striped bass, by croaker, and so on, and various other, by the way, residents of seagrass beds as well. And that's one of the things that I think is the most problematic, that if we cannot predict how many in the bay at a given year, that means that we can't say what the predation rate is going to be. So, for instance, if someone had come up to us and said, okay, in 2012, we're going to have an explosion of puppy drum. With that, we could have put it into some of our models and projected some survival rate for those young juveniles. But that's not something that, as far as I'm aware, we can get at this point. We would have to be able to project the red drum abundance in that year, striped bass, croaker, and various other species to be able to say that. Now, we're trying to do that. We're trying to get a revise our model so that if we get those numbers, we can at least explain what happened. So what we're hoping to do is explain what happened in 2000. Can we explain it with the predation, increased predation rate in 2012? But basically, right now, until they get to the survey point, and somewhat thereafter, we're sort of left with these environmental stresses, which includes predation risk as well. Okay, so now I'm going to take, I only have about four slides here left. I'll try to go through those. What I did is basically I gave a presentation of this in 2012, this after the 2012 survey, where we had low female abundance, and I'm going to show you some of that data. So what I said to you, and this is extracted from that, it's not the whole thing. I didn't want to provide you too much of the text. So what we saw in 2012, if you recall, we had higher juvenile recruitment in the survey and low female abundance. And we were trying to figure out, had we gone back to the point where we were back in the low phase of abundance. And so we did various analyses, and I'll show you a couple of the graphs to show you that will demonstrate that. The low female abundance in 2012, basically, if you look here, was not unexpected. So I'll show you the data. And within the range of variability observed during those years of moderate to high abundance. The high recruitment in 2012 indicated that female abundance in 2013 is likely to rise. You'll see that it did rise, but not as much as we had hoped, probably due to that predation. And at that time, I did mention that there are warning signs that the collective effects of environmental variation and high fishing pressure could cause a reversal to another low phase of abundance. Therefore, we had recommended risk-averse management at that case. And I'm not going to go over the 2014 yet. Let me show you some of the data. So to explain this, what this is a face portrait. It basically graphs, and I've shown you this once, a couple times maybe. It plots the abundance in 1 year. Right, say right here, your T minus, so that's your T minus one, and then versus what happens the subsequent year. It gives us a sense, really, of the dynamics of the system in a particular time frame. And what we saw is, I'll bring you to the first point. So what we saw in 91, remember we had high abundance in 91. It sort of dropped somewhat in 92, but was remaining high in 93, 94, 95. So it was sort of floating around this time frame where, you know, it was moderate to high abundance. There was variability. It tells us that we do see variability. It's not just consistently high. But what that meant is that point that we saw in 2012, when you plotted not only the 2012 but relative to 2011, was within that time frame. It was, within that sort of regime. So we have to be cautious, but it wasn't collapsed. It wasn't the decline. In contrast, if you look at this time frame, so this is starting 2006. Starting, 2001, I believe? 99. So it started 1999 and up until the year before the severe management measures in 2008, it remained there. So it was stuck down there. And this is actually indicative of many population sort of dynamics systems that have sort of a couple different regimes that you can be stuck in a phase, and it takes a severe change in mortality or reduction in mortality for it to get out of that. You can't just have sort of small changes and expect it to get out. What you have to do is you have to have a severe reduction in mortality for it to get out, and that's exactly what we think happened after the management measures in 2008. It went out of that, and you see the 2010 because the recruits then led to higher female abundance, of course, started in 2008 and 9 and then continued. So it got out of that frame and then sort of remained there. So that's what led us to believe, as I said, that we were in a we had to be careful, but we were not in the collapse region. So what Rob asked me to do is to revise that and show you where the 2000 and 2013 and 2014 data points are. This is for the T0, so it's for recruitment. Recruitment is much more variable than the females, and you'll see the difference where we still had some in 2009, we still had low recruitment. It really bounces around, but what is this point didn't concern me as much, but then the 2014 recruitment, which shows you the effect of both the 2013 and 2014. So this is a 2014 level on the y-axis, and that's a 2013 level. Both are low, and that is a little bit disconcerting. However, you have to keep in mind that juvenile recruitment is typically low. Typically very variable. So let me show you instead what's happening with the females. So this is, to me, the more important one, because the females are a little less variable and give us, I think, a better sense of what's going on. So you see the same pattern. Basically, you see what happens here. That 2009, right after management, there's 2008, whereas abundance was stuck down here in that regime, it popped out and stayed out. 11, 12, I mean, it's sort of moving around, similar to what was happening in the early 1990s. So now in 2013, we're here, and 2014, we're here. Now we expect there to be an increase in 2015 because we do have higher juvenile abundance. And you probably didn't notice from Rob's presentation, but every time we've been around 190 to 200 million juveniles, the subsequent year is between about 80 and 90 million females. So I would expect that the spawning stock is going to come up above the threshold. So we're going to be somewhere between the target and threshold. So again, this points out that, yes, we are, we're not quite in that collapsed or decline phase, but we're too darn close to it. And let me show you what we would expect. So this is the stock recruit relationship. And what I did is I added the points from 2013 and 2014. This is a typical sort of Ricker type stock recruit relationship. It's the females versus recruits here, 8-0s. And again, this was that very low phase. So we had one point that went there, but then 2014's here. 2015 projections should be somewhere around, we would expect somewhere up around here for juveniles. So we should see an increase in juveniles now. So we should see an increase in the spawning stock and then subsequently another increase in juveniles. But we need to be very careful. So I'll take you back to this. So this is our summary then, recommendation or so for 2014. So high recruitment in 2012 had elevated female abundance in 2013. We did see that, but not to the degree expected, possibly due to heavy predation and potentially cannibalism. Increased female abundance in 2013 did lead to higher recruitment in 2014. But so it's along the lines of what we would project, but age zero and female age one crab abundances remain low. The moderately higher recruitment in 2014 suggests that female abundance in 2015 will rise, and that's where I'm saying I think it'll be somewhere between the threshold and target. So we should be out of that danger zone, well, below the threshold. Given that the spawning stock and recruitment remain close to the levels observed during the decline of the 90s, we would recommend the maintenance of a prudent risk-averse management is necessary to prevent collapse of the spawning stock to that lower phase. So that's sort of the final statement. And if there are any questions on that? I think it's a mix of bad news and good news. Bad news, we're remaining low, but the good news is that we fully expect to go back up, especially given what Rob saw with those reductions in fishing. We would hope that a higher fraction of the recruits then will survive as well, So I think things are, again, looking better on the horizon, but it does tell us how the environment and predators can affect the system.
Dr. Lipschitz, I have a question here, and I don't want to get too semantic on this, but I'm looking at your summary from 2012 compared to your current summary here. And while a risk-averse strategy was recommended then, it was to protect the spawning stock. And now you're saying it's necessary to protect the collapse of the spawning stock.
Well,
is that taking it too far?
I'm not. Okay, so you could easily say return to the low phase. So, yes, that's the way I would. You can change that semantically.
All I want is whether or not you think that along the current path here, we risk collapse of the stock.
No, I'm saying that if we have a higher fishing pressure, if fishing pressure were to increase, and if we were to have another one of these events like we had with Puppy Drum or so, then we would risk collapse.
Yeah. Good.
No, we're not. That's what I'm saying. We are still out of that very low phase, but you know, you need to have a buffer to prevent the collapse.
Don't scare me with using the word collapse.
Decline. Okay, I'll switch to decline. That's fine. Oh, prevent a return to the low phase.
Thank you. Questions from the commission?
We'll say I knew that was. I had to reconsider whether I should.
Scare me like that. Thanks. Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
So just a couple of comments from staff. One is, I hope what you heard was that given the amount of juveniles, 198 million, an expectation, and you can look at those charts, that table one that has the 25 years, and there are trends there. Sometimes the trends are broken, but there are trends there. So there should be a bouncing back is right. But note that the bouncing back is to get above the overfish or the depleted level. The target is 215 million female age 1 plus crabs, and that was accomplished in 2010, almost in 2011 again. Both very good fishing years for our industries, both recreational and commercial. The other thing, and I didn't say too much about it, but let's not forget blue catfish is a predator. It's just that studies are now going on. Joe Grist is part of a catfish task force, I'll call it that, involved with the Golden Temptation team, so he has some information if you need that. There have been studies done in Burwell's Bay, and there have also been studies further upriver. So that continues to be studied by Virginia Department of Game and Inland Fisheries through Virginia Commonwealth University, and we'll know more as that goes on. But obviously, you probably have seen in the press that the biomass of blue catfish in our systems and throughout the bay is large. I'm going to go directly to the management options now, and we'll come back with a few slides that you haven't seen before about the harvest and the effort. But this slide shows information about the 10% reduction, and the 10% reduction is from the 2013 harvest, which you can see is just under 18 million. And you can see based on the sex composition of blue crabs in Virginia that means it'd be about 1.3 million pounds of female crabs would be part of the reduction. And what's proposed and what's in the notice is that there should be a shortened crab fishery season as one item. That really wasn't embraced by too many, but here we mean, if you remember, there was a December 1 to 15 extension of the crab pot season the previous 2 years. So when you look at the regulation a little bit, you'll see that nothing goes beyond November 30th. And then bushel limits. So this is a situation where you'll have more detail in a minute. 2014 is the first time there have been bushel limits that have been designed based on more than just making up for harvests that occurred in December. These are really brand new. They started March 17th. So they are called the current bushel limits for 2014. There's also a proposal not to have any female crab harvest whatsoever during the last 2 weeks of November. That was a proposal, and that's in keeping with what started in 2008. Actually, that season was closed October 26th in 2008, and in the subsequent 3 years, it went to really the last 10 days in November. There's also a proposal to halve the current bushel limits, and by that, it means instead of having a complete closure in November for, you know, blue crabs, period, or to have just male crabs, this is more directed to the idea that you could have some harvest. It would be half as much. Again, there aren't the abundance of harvesters in November that there are in other months. You know, it's probably about 250 harvesters. So this would give an opportunity for harvest in November. It would just be half the current bushel limits is what you're going to see. Similarly, when we approached the Crab Management Advisory Committee, and this idea really stemmed from that committee meeting, there was also a lot of talk about, well, wait a minute, you're going to save crabs in November so that harvesters can come in March and take them then. And no one would want to do that, and that is why in March, when the season opens till the end of the month, there's a halving of that period, too, as far as the bushel limits go. Now, in terms of the timeline here, this is in keeping with the Bay jurisdictions have agreed to, a July 5 period start and July 4th. In this current case right here, in this situation, July 5th through November 30th, March 17th through July 4th. Alone, the bushel limits can achieve a 10% reduction. That's really where staff left off last commission meeting. However, Mr. Erskine, when he asked about the approach to the advertisement, asked that other options be considered, and staff feels that the 10% reduction should be for every gear type, and that equal spreading of the reduction. So for that reason, it's been calculated that if the other gear fisheries except for crab pot were closed September 16th, 2014, and stayed closed until May 1 or May 16th, depending on how severe a reduction is required or wanted by the commission, then that would be at least a 10% reduction. So I'm going right to this to let you know, to tell you this, so this will be something you won't be surprised about. Bushel limits that happen in the future are in the future. We don't know exactly which 12-month harvest regime will occur. It's very difficult to say whether July 5th, 2014 to July 4th, 2015, whether that will have some semblance to 2008-2009, 2009-2010, 2011-2012, and even 2006-2007. So there are two databases that form the bushel limit. The first one is a combination of certain months from 2009, 10, and 11. It's a little above average type of scenario. The second one uses 2006 and 2007 only. And if you remember, that's right before disaster relief and everything else occurred. So you know, if you look at 2006 and 2007, which I can bring back up later, that those were low periods. Those were really low periods. So you can imagine that if you wanted to reduce the 10% using the idea that 2014, 2015 will behave like 2006, 2007, those reductions are going to be rigorous. They're going to be pretty tough reductions. However, if you want to say we have 198 million juvenile crabs, which will come into the fishery in late summer through early fall, then the 2009, 10, 11 select months might be something that would mirror what's going to happen in 2014-15. No one can escape the situation that you can't look ahead and know what's going to happen. You do have the abundance to guide you, though, and we did use that. So with that, I'm going to go through the situation and the current limits. That's what are in place right now, right as of today. These are the current limits that the Commission adopted October 22nd, 2013. And you can see there are five pot categories, and there are an increasing amount of bushels allowed up to 425, which is the largest category. And you also know from last year that if you have two individuals, it's the higher of the bushel limits that becomes the vessel landing limit. So in this case, it's option two, and it uses that 2009, 10, and 11 select months, and it also has a closure on female crabs. So only male crabs would be allowed from November 16th to the 30th. And it adds a season closure, which has been mentioned, from September 16th, and the next time that opens is May 1. And you can see here that from July 5th through November 15th, those are the bushel limits, and similarly, when you come back March 17th through July 4th, those are the same as well. If you look down below here, you can see what I talked about, that we're trying to present different approaches that might have some resemblance to 2014-2015 based on abundance trends and everything else. And here's the 2008 to 2009 12 months all the way to 2012-2013. And what you see are the amount of crabs saved here with the goal, overall goal, being 1.8 million pounds roughly. And what staff did, which you didn't see last time, is converted the pounds to numbers of crabs, because after all, the abundance is in numbers. So now they are confluent, that you have the harvest in numbers and you have the abundance in numbers. And when you look at the savings, there's only one 10.1% that would achieve at least a 10% reduction, and that happens to line up with a pretty good fishing period, a crabbing period of 2010 through 2011. Not the best periods if you go back far enough, you know, more than 10, 12 years, but the best period probably since 2008 anyway. So that's one situation. Here's option three. This is in your packet as a staff recommendation. It's also the Crab Management Advisory Committee recommendation. What has changed since the Crab Management Advisory Committee, and I'll show you, current bushel limits that are in place now, there were two bushels that had to be changed here lower for the 255 crab pots and the 425 crab pots. And the reason that had to be changed was because the abundance, when in numbers of crabs, did not quite extend to the 10%, because the composition is 73% female crabs. So it's not going to boost up the pounds quite enough without lowering these bushel limits by two bushels for each treatment. And what you see is a little bit of difference. I'm going to go back just for a second. You can see right here, 10, 14, 18, 29, 47 throughout for the five categories. Here you see some differences. From July 5th through November 15th, compared to what you would see November 16th through 30th and March 17th through March 31st. So the difference here is these bushel limits, the current bushel limits, are halved in November at the last 2 weeks and in March. What this does, it allows a fishery to proceed through November. It allows product to be available. And at the same time, it does not allow, if there's another 2012, when effort doubled and harvest doubled, it won't allow that. And then you can see starting April 1, the bushel limits mirror what happened over here in 2014. If you come below to the table below, you can see the amount saved compared to the goal or the objective. And you can see even in pounds, this 2000-2011 is met. But the other part which makes this option a little bit more palatable, I think, as far as a conservation effort, is you have part of 2011, but you have 2012 as well. Both reach the 10%. Now, you always have to keep in mind, and Dr. Lipschitz mentioned the variability involved in this, and we do look at the abundance to help guide these, but there could be changes. And that's why the juvenile crab is a key element in terms of conservation. So staff and CMAQ both have recommended option three. CMAQ made it pretty clear they want to see this for 1 year, but the way things are designed, it's designed for 12 months. And that speaks to another question just in general, because there are a lot of thoughts out there in the industry, and the idea that don't do anything for 2015. That was brought up at CMAQ. Wait for the winter dredge survey. Well, the problem is that's what we did in the past, and that's where we become hamstrung by waiting till May to decide what we should do about March and April, or even May. That's why there's an approach to have this juvenile situation, have crabs conserved, and I think the other part is it's on record that bushel limits are available to be adjusted both upwards and downwards. So option four, this again is that data set I mentioned where you're actually not using select months from 2009, 10, and 11. You're using data from 2006, 2007, a low period. And then you're applying it to the same five treatments, trying to say which of these 12-month periods would be a mimic of 2014-2015. And what you find, you can see pretty quickly, and that's why I told you in advance, the goal is met in 4 out of 5 and pretty nearly 5 out of 5 in pounds saved. It certainly meets the 10%. And in terms of numbers, you know, the range there is almost 15 to almost 19% reduction. So this is the other way to look at having reductions. Staff will mention that everything's not as it should be in the industry, in either the peeler pot or the crab pot industry. And there are those in the industry who are repeatedly telling staff, more so now than ever before, that there's anywhere from a major amount of cheating on pots to wholesale cheating on pots. The only consolation to have with these reductions are that if crabbers will set whatever pots they want, because it's a law enforcement situation, that there is no way. I talked to Colonel Lauderman right before this meeting. I've talked to him before. There is no way to police too many pots. There are too many scams involved with setting extra pots. It's that simple. But if crabbers are setting more pots to get a certain amount of bushels to bring back in their vessel, and you have a lower bushel limit, well then, that's going to be somewhat effective, no matter what. So overall, I mean, I think the idea is pretty solid here, that we're trying for something for the short term. If you want to call it stopgap, if you want to call it, you know, making sure that the overfished or depleted condition can't happen again because of management lassitude, then that's what we're promoting as a staff. So I've done that, and that's really the key part of the presentation, what you just went through there. But there are certain things that staff wants to bring to your attention. that you've asked about before. There is something called latent effort, and there are different ways that latent effort and even illegal effort is out there. And the yellow line tells you who's eligible, how much eligibility there are. And the red line is indicating license sales. But the green line is the important line because that tells you how much is active. So you have at least a pretty good distance and have had that distance even wider. There have been measures to buy back crab pots. There have been measures to buy back peeler pots. There still is a waiting list with 236 individuals on it. So that's what most of this drop is about. But there really is quite a gulf here. Some, we looked at it, some do move into the fishery. So in 2008, those who weren't doing anything moved in 2009. In 2009, the same thing. It's not an abundance, but the idea that latent effort is always going to be latent is not accurate. Here's a situation with the peeler pot, even a wider gulf in terms of, you know, who's active and who's eligible. And it's been that way for even back to 2003, which isn't shown here. So, you know, those situations are there as well. They have to be planned for. Staff needs to do a little more rigorous looking to follow the exact magnitude of what could happen if there's a spike in abundance. Clearly, you crabbers come in. The big complaint at CMAC, well, a complaint about CMAC, or at CMAC, I should say, another complaint, rightly so, is that the full-time fishermen are the ones who are impacted the most. The commission has always struggled with what full-time means. But I think we generally know what it means, that you're spending a lot of your time harvesting crabs. And you can say, is that 150 days? Is that 200 days for a crab pot? Is that 60 days for a peeler pot? Is that 90 days for a peeler pot fisherman? You can debate those. But here, what you see is 2008 and 2010. Poor year, good year. No harvest. You can see that over here in 2008, and you can see 2010. Well, what happened? Well, those who weren't in there in 2008 did something in 2010. We haven't refined this down to how many days, how many pounds of these harvesters that came in. Same thing happens here, 2008, with the large license. So these focus on two license categories, the largest licenses. 699 harvesters, 594 here, 127 with the largest license, 425. By 2010, 113. As you go down here, when I first saw this, I said, well, there's not too much change overall. It looks as if 2010 for the large license does a little bit better, but especially with the large volume of crabs. So this doesn't tell us much yet. But another thing that should tell us all a lot is that when you look at 1994 to 2003 compared to the current 10-year period, 2004 to 13, you see that the effort really dropped off, which everyone talks about and says, look at the effort. It dropped off, and you know it dropped off. And we say, yes, it did. The catch per unit effort, though, has increased. So if you look down here, the number of trips on average in the first 10-year period, about 74,000. In the second 10-year period, about 52,000. But look at the pounds per trip here. I really wonder, A, are the full-time crabbers doing what they really can do, and that's what we're seeing here, or is this compounded by not adhering to pot limits, and that's how people do what they do? Because you have 696 or so in that next to largest pot category. So this gives you a synopsis of the regulatory changes. I'm going to go over them, if that's okay, Commissioner.
Please.
Okay? And in 270, which you have before you and which Joe Grist is handing out on blue paper, some housekeeping up front in section 30. There is not a recommended December 1 through 15th season extension, as there was in 2012 and 2011. So that's what you'll find there. In terms of the season limits, in section 40, November 30th would be the last day. And as I go through this, I remind you that staff included option 3, the one also endorsed by the Crab Management Advisory Committee. And in keeping with that, September 15th would be the last day for all crab gears except for crab pot to fish in 2014. May 1 would be the first day for all other crab gears except for crab pot to begin crabbing in 2015. Subsection C is to change the dates as to when you can have gear. It's on page 4. And then 51. Section 51 relates to the bushel limits, the vessel limits, and it extends from July 5 through November 15, and April 1 through July 4th, because the last 2 weeks in November and March will be addressed in a different section of the regulation. But you can see the bushel limits here. And in your strike add version, you can see the current, as they exist now, bushel limits compared to these. So this is the November 16th through November 30th, 2014 bushel limits, and then the March bushel limits, as I mentioned. And once again, you can see your strike add. And please know again that these are one half of the current bushel limits that we have right now. This came directly from a request from the Crab Management Advisory Committee. I think it was their only motion from 2 meetings ago. That's most of the substantive information in Regulation 270. You will note under minimum size limits in Section 55, changing those dates because the season has changed as well as to when those 3 1/4 and 3 1/2 apply to. Commissioner, would you like me to go forward with the crab dredging regulation?
Let's wrap it all together.
Okay. So 4 VAC 2011-4020, crab dredging prohibited. And as a reminder, last October, this came before the commission. It was a very intensive effort on the part of all involved. And this season, when staff mentioned to the Crab Management Advisory Committee a few months ago that there would not be a recommendation from staff to open the winter crab dredge season for 2014 to 2015, there really were no comments. Not that those comments are still there. I mean, not to think that there aren't still a situation out there. And I want to take a moment to tell you we haven't forgotten about the triggers that was asked about at CMAC. The triggers have gone forward to the full goal implementation team. That includes NOAA, Maryland, Virginia, PRFC, and other NGOs. Joe Grist asked for some comments back after we had a phone conference several months ago with them and has gotten one comment back, but this will have to be resolved sometime later in the summer to get that for you, so that you know what the science is really recommending. All that was done by staff was, after listening to almost contradictory comments from the scientists, was to change the approach to where, instead of you using an average, you actually use a median approach. What's 50th percent? And look at it that way. So we'll keep you posted on that. That's important. And for right now, this is just the recommendation by staff from December 1, 2014 through March 31st, 2015 to close the crab dredge fishery, which is in keeping with Section 28.2.707 of the Code of Virginia. So the overall staff recommendation: staff recommends adoption of the proposed amendments to Chapter 4 of the AC 227010 in sequence for the period that extends from July 5 through July 4, 2015. This recommendation supports Option 3 as the basis for crab pot, bushel, and vessel limits for that 12-month period, and establishes limitations in harvesting periods for all other gear types that are lawful for the harvest of blue crab. Staff recommends the adoption of Chapter 4 of the AC 2011-40-10 in sequence, and this adoption would close the 2014-15 crab dredge fishery season. And here's Option 3 again. That's all I have, Commissioner.
Great. Thank you, Chief. Any questions from the Commission? Mr. Close.
Rob, if we have a warm winter and a warm spring, and let's just say when the peeler run has already gotten underway, wouldn't you say the opening of the May 15th, you know, the May 1st peeler run, wouldn't that just funnel everybody down into one river like the Rappahannock, which is in the upper part of the bay?
I think it would, but May 1 is the preferred option. I heard you say May 15th, too. That was advertised, but May 1 would be the preferred option. Our understanding is that on the western side and in the lower bay, May 1, if it's not too warm, would help save some of the waste of the spring. Not that everyone wastes crabs, but green crabs are there. Save some of the waste in April. The problem with setting too many pots is still there. The problem with harvesters, this is what we hear from industry, not that we're coming up with. The problem with harvesters getting out and just leaving pots to make sure they get something would be eliminated, but yet that may could still be productive, since May is usually 55% to 50% of the entire statewide peeler harvest. On the other side of it, because we've talked to folks from Tangier as well, you get further up the bay, it's the fall season that they're worried about. And throughout this, we know there's worry and concern. But we also know when it comes to the peeler pot fishery, we don't have the same amount of tools to figure out how to get an even fair reduction. Bushel limits came up in CMAQ two meetings ago, and the motion was withdrawn. And it's understandable that if similar situation, if you've got a load of peelers, are you discarding crabs for what purpose? Peeler crabs for what purpose? So I agree with you. If we get another 2012, I think we saw April. We saw a shift in 2012 where all of a sudden over the last many years there was an April harvest. But I think it's the tool we have right now.
Right. And I heard you talk about law enforcement as far as counting the pots. Do you know how many times, how many violations were really being wrote as far as over their limit?
No. I do not. I don't know who's here from law enforcement, whether they can categorize that for you or not. If you're strictly on the pot limits, my understanding, and law enforcement can correct me, there were cases made. It's not a natural situation where law enforcement can make these cases. When I talked to Colonel Lauderman right before the meeting, he said things that we knew, in that they might have pots in one area, pots in another area. They might have different buoy colors. They might, maybe not so good. They might just have, which came up at CMAQ when we talked about pot limits, which I don't think is going to be a huge problem, but you establish single buoys, but you have trot lines.
I think you misunderstood the question. I said, okay. Bushel limits versus pot. How many violations of over the limit, not pots, but bushels violations were? Do you know what that is? I mean, as far as...
No. We have someone here that can tell us from law enforcement, perhaps. I do not know. I did misunderstand your question.
Mr. Close, I don't know, but law enforcement has not mentioned to me any significant number of cases of people being over their bushel limit. And I have asked them to make sure that that's on their list of things to make sure that's done.
Okay. If I may, I suppose you could bring in your limit more than once. I mean, I am familiar with that. So there are all sorts of ways. I think one of the...
Not permissibly.
No, but I think one of the things we think about as we move down the road, since it's been talked about a lot, is if there's eventually a quota. In 2018, the new Chesapeake Bay Agreement says there will be allocation. Well, allocation leads to quotas. And if there is a quota, law enforcement needs to help us figure out how that can be a managed quota. Because with the crab fishery, offloading areas are numerous.
Thank you. Mr. Erskine.
I have one question for you, Rob, about the 10% reduction. Where did that 10% reduction come from? Was it a figure that was based on a data set or some kind of science that said, you know, we have this level of females, it's lower than the threshold that we anticipate. So a 10% versus like a 5% reduction or something. Where did the 10% come from?
After the fact, I would say yes, it is something that would look at the female production, but it would... In reality, the way the 10% arose, and I think I mentioned this last meeting, we met, the commissioner staff met with Maryland and their staff and the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, and Virginia was very interested in this two-pronged approach without having an exact figure in mind, a production figure. But definitely a reduction to get the conservation. But Virginia did not come into that meeting saying it has to be 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever. The main thing was a depleted stock needs some assistance from management if possible. Maryland indicated that their fishermen needed a target. They needed something that they could understand what they were doing. So that is where the 10% came about. So that, and when I think about it, harvesters may have difficulty saying, we're going to put in management measures so we can increase the spawning potential of not only spawning age crabs in 2014, but juveniles in 2015. That might be a lost message. So after the fact, 10% was looked at. And also I think that's necessary to, first of all, not impact the industry unduly, because one of the slides that you saw in the beginning shows that the exploitation fraction has been held to for 6 years in a row. We even heard it's really not the harvesters as such that have put this situation for all of us to look at. Two things about that. One, 37 million pounds, regardless of what you're doing with your exploitation fraction, that's not something that you want to cherish. Two, it'd be very difficult to show when exactly harvest. Was there too much 2010 harvest? We had 85 million pounds. Did we need 85 million pounds in the bay when the long-term average is about 70? Did that cause a problem that reverberated through the abundance? So these are all sort of interlocked. And so to impact the harvesters to a great amount should not be the focus here. But to get a conservation of spawning crabs both this year, which will not be that much. We've only got 68.5 million after they run the gauntlet of fisheries. And then take the 198 million and get some savings in 2015. I hope that answers your question, because that's the way it happened.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Additional questions?
One more.
Mr. Cliff.
On the 255 pot category, I see they took the hardest hit. Is that because they were the most licensed?
Hardest hit compared to the current bushel limit?
Well, what's like on option three?
Yes, I'm going to go to that. Let's see.
They went from 43 to 29.
One second, I can look at that if I'm smart enough to do this. I'm almost with you. Almost there. There we go. Okay. Now, where are you looking, Mr. Close?
Like
255.
Mm-hmm.
43 to 29.
Mm-hmm.
So since that is based on 2009 through 11 data, I think it's just a matter of where you're cutting them down from those who had that type of harvest. So what I know this is unusual, but I think you've heard this before. The bushel limits are based on who had the highest harvest originally. They were reduced to get the original bushel limits. So you know already there are less in the 255 and 425 category to be cut back who are making that bushel limit, because it's not an average bushel limit. So if you imagine, I'll just say a figure, if you imagine only 10% of the 255 pot crab pots would be residing with this 43 bushel limit, you can see that they get pulled down. It's not at the average basis. And in fact, that was another issue with CMAQ when they said it's only the full-time fishermen who get impacted. And CMAQ worried about the other 90%, it could be 80%, who wouldn't be fishing at the 43. The worry was, would they come back up? Would they increase? Would they have recoupment? And I think on the first question, what we've seen with some of the information I showed you towards the end, the 255 crab pot and the 425 crab pot fishermen have actually had higher catches per trip in the last 10 years than they did 10 years ago when there were more harvesters. And I think the second part about recoupment, my response to the Crab Management Advisory Committee is the same now. We're not sure about who's going to take advantage of saying, oh, look, there's a 29 bushel limit. I've only been doing 6. Let me do 10. We don't know that. But what we know is from the work that Joe was doing earlier, you do also have those latent licensees become active too. So you've got a compounding effect. I mean, there's a lot here that some things might help out as we go in the future, I do think that the industry has some good suggestions. I do think that they need to be worked out collaboratively, and you know, I'll leave it to them to propose their suggestions, but that's the future.
Thank you, Chief. Any other questions from the Commission? Thank you. This is a public hearing. Anyone who wishes to be heard on the matter before us here, please come forward, approach the microphone. Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Ken Smith. I'm president of the Virginia Watermen's Association. I'm on CMAC, and I'm a member of the Blue Crab Advisory Panel. And I appreciate the time, Mr. Commissioner and Associate Commissioner. I hope I don't go everywhere with this. I kind of hope I can stay in some type of order. But the crabbers are not very happy about the 10% reduction. I think CMAC itself, the watermen on CMAC, were not particularly happy about it either, but they figured they had to vote for something, so option three was accepted. Last year, watermen didn't hit their bushel limits. This year, they're not hitting their bushel limits. They're not hitting their bushel limits for what the proposed cuts will be. And they looked at it as a fact of, I'm not doing it now. What if a run does come along and then I'm limited? I'm still going to be at the income that I was. And I can see their point. I look at it as a different type of thing myself. I don't see where it actually where it guarantees that it's going to conserve crabs at all. I mean, if they're not, they could come along and get a higher bushel limit than what they had last year and still not achieve the bushel limits there that are there, which theoretically you could end up catching more crabs than what you catch right now. I just think that there might be other better management decisions that could be made. Now, I'm speaking personally on that part of it, but I've spoken how the watermen feel. But what I'm really here to talk to you about today is the Blue Crab panel, and Billy Mullis will come up and talk about the four recommendations that were submitted last month and discuss those further with you. But I'd like to just back this panel up a little bit with the history of the panel. In early 2012, the VMRC commissioned this panel for a long-term range. The panel members were appointed and approved by VMRC, and before the panel ever met for the first time, and before the panel met for that first time, Jack Travelstead gave us 10 terms of reference. Three of those terms of references were input versus output controls, harvest reporting accountability, and incidental mortality. So when Billy presents our recommendations today, those are simply, we're just responding there to the direction and request of VMRC. This is what they're presenting here today. One of the things that proposed in there is a pilot program where any crabber, no matter where they're located on the bay, is allowed to participate or can apply to participate in this program. No one is excluded. The pilot will have no impact on any other crabbers that opt out to participate because the individual quota of the pilot participants will be based on the individual's catch history. Now, generally when things go into a quota in other systems, what we've learned is your quota is probably going to be actually less than what your crab catch history was. And the idea of that is that you fish for a higher dollar product. Now, I don't think a lot of watermen, some watermen understand this concept and some don't, but I think one of the watermen really hit the caught on to it the other day at Sunday's meeting. He's spending $180 a day in crab bait. If he were to work 40 less days a year, he would save $180 daily, which would equate to 200 bushels of $18 crabs. Be more than that if they were 16 or 18. But that's like he could give up those 200 bushels of crabs, but because he worked 40 days less, he's actually made that. But if he could extend his time to catch those crabs in the fall at another time, or in the winter, he would more than make that up as well. Oh, Mr. Tankert's had a concern about nobody from Tangier being on the crab industry panel. Tangier has been invited. And we've set up a conference call for them, and you know, that has not been followed. But they know what's going on. We talk with them constantly, and there's been a website created called VirginiaCrabbers.com where the agenda and all the meetings in the agenda and everything we've discussed and voted on is posted online. So people know about this. And I tell you, we really want the Tangier watermen to be a part of this, to be actively involved. Mr. Mullis talks all the time about we bought into bad stock. This panel is kind of like a company in a way. The panel members are like the board of directors, and the watermen are the stockholders. And not all stockholders in every company know what the board of directors is talking about, but they sure understand when the company's making money or losing money. And I think this approach that we're talking about with a pilot program is moving into that thing where it will be economic. Dr. Liptis got up here, and when Dr. Erskine's asked him a question, Dr. Liptis kind of said that the concrete science for his question wasn't there. And I noticed on the chart he showed all the circles, and I kind of got dizzy looking at them. But 2014, it was no 2008 there, but it's certainly less than what it was in 2009. It went up, and it's been going down. So we're right back in that. And if we don't have the science to prove it, there's another kind of science out there. It's called economic science. And if we can go out there and prove that a crabber can work less days, catch fewer crabs, and make more money, I think it's a good reason to start looking at the recommendations this panel is doing, and maybe have the sanction of VMRC to go forth in 2015 with it. The panel's hoping that someone will make a motion to this effect today to let the I have one of those documents back. I'd like for you to, in this motion, we're not asking for the panel to approve a pilot program. What we're asking is that the crab bait foot fishery control pilot program, based on the project elements that the panel has developed, and direct staff to work with the panel members through the fall of this year to finalize the design of this pilot program and details of other recommendations. But in there it says that staff and the panel work together to finalize the design. So I hope when we finish this and Mr. Mullis speaks about this pilot program, that we don't beat him up today trying to find out the specifics and try to develop that pilot program today in this meeting, but that be done over the next few months. But the blessings are there to proceed with maybe a new type of manager. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Anybody else wish to address the commission on this matter?
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner, Associate Commissioners. I'm Kim Humphrey. I'm the Executive Director of the Virginia Seafood Council. The Virginia Seafood Council has eight members. that are directly related to the crab fishery from harvesters to processors. Our members are peeler potters and hard crabbers from up and down the entire bay. So you can imagine at times it's difficult to come to a consensus on how to manage the crab fishery. The one thing that all of my members agree about today is that nothing should be done to regulate the crab fishery at this time. Over the course of the last 15 to 20 years, the crab industry has been regulated by everything from no fishing on Wednesdays, changing the coal ring sizes, to closing down the entire winter crab dredge fishery. And here we are today looking at one of the worst commercial harvests in as many years. We are in a crisis, and it is not because of overfishing. Continuing to make management decisions based on the winter crab dredge survey alone has got to change. There are too many factors in play in the crab dredge, in the crab fishery, to solely rely on this data year after year. Weather, predation, and water quality all play a significant role in the population. Reducing the female crab harvest by 10% will do nothing in the short term and will have no effect whatsoever because there are not many harvesters catching their limits right now anyway, as Mr. Smith with Virginia Watermen's Association has mentioned. It will, however, have a major effect this fall and spring of next year if the crabs start to show up, which I think Dr. Lipsius seems to think with the juvenile population that they will. And the harvesters will not have the opportunity to make up their losses that they have suffered in the spring and summer of this year. To that end, if the commission sees fit to vote in favor of staff's recommendations, we ask the commission to set a firm sunset date of July 15, 2015 on this regulation. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Commissioner Bull, Associate Commissioners, how are you today? I'm Bill Mullis. I'm the chairman of Blue Crab Industry Panel. And from now on, I think when I come up, I want y'all to look at me as future and not past and present. Because I know, you know, Rob has got a lot of information out of the past, and we're looking at the present. But I'm really trying to look down the road in the future with the crab panel, and that's been what our charge is. I think Ken said a lot, but basically, when we were formed, we were given guiding principles by BMRC and terms of reference. And in the terms of reference, we have our input versus output controls, harvest and reporting accountability, and incidental mortality. They were three of the key elements in it. And, you know, so when we look at those terms of reference, we're kind of focused on developing more of a long-term plan for a biologically and economically sustainable year-round blue crab fishery in the state of Virginia. To me, I mean, and the panel, the current regs being looked at, they're somewhat short-term. Y'all are regulating today, responding to the winter dredge survey, and this is somewhat of an annual event. But I really don't see any long-term planning to prevent overfishing the current stock levels. And, you know, they were declared a disaster. So we feel like that we need measures responding to management and the resources at the current levels, and they're not really including, in other words, our management we're doing is responding to where we are right now, but we feel like we need a fairly aggressive strategy actually to rebuild crab stocks. That's not anything I've heard up here today. I hear us talking about where the fishery is today, how we got here, what we've done in the past, but I still won't hear any aggressive management measures really coming out about, okay, this is where we are, but what are we going to do to actually rebuild these stocks back? So, you know, I think that we're really going to have to move at a much more rapid pace than we've been moving if we want to respond to crab stocks and have them respond back to our measures. We've actually got to do something different. One thing that I found interesting, I did go to the implementation team meeting at BIMS a week or two ago. I found that very interesting, and Ron and Rob did a great job again, and Joe, presenting information to everybody about Virginia blue crabs and the stocks in Chesapeake Bay. And I really want to compliment them for their knowledge and the work they've done in the fishery. One thing we're looking at, and we heard it again, Rob mentioned it a few minutes ago, is 2018, people are looking at some type of quota-based system around the bay. And so I just want to encourage us to probably be able to take a snapshot and look in our future a little ways and decide how we'll approach that. And I think we can get ahead of the game by trying to work together early on. So some of the measures that we've got as an industry panel, we're recommending establishment of a pilot blue crab management program that emphasizes and utilizes output controls rather than current input controls, and a draft proposal for the pilot program is included. I don't think I need to read it here. It'll take too much time, and it really has nothing to do with today's vote on y'all's short-term management measures. But I think it's something we need to look at. We're not looking for the commission or staff to approve this pilot program with some of the measures we've got in. They're just talking points to develop a groundwork and a foundation to build a pilot program. So what I'd like to ask the commission to do is look at this, consider it, and in the near future, let's get together and talk about it, or I'll come back to your next meeting. And I'd like for y'all to have some formal encouragement of staff and industry panel to continue to work together, maybe to develop a pilot program, including ROM's staff at VIMS, to look at a pilot program and how we'd start building one today instead of wait until 2018 and figure out it's time to maybe look at a different style. So the pilot program is something I think is very important, particularly if we ever thought that this bay would be regulated with more of a tax-style output-based fishery. You know, I like Rob, have heard a lot recently about the numbers of crab pots being used. And so I think there's definitely some inherent problems with input-based fisheries when a lot of the input management measures may not be enforceable. But I do want to look at maybe Potomac River. They've had a pot tagging program in place for a pretty good while, and I don't know how well it's working or not. I guess we'll have to ask Wayne France or somebody up there, but at least it's in place, and it encourages them to do the right thing. And I think with any program, there's going to be cheaters in a lot of ways to circumvent the rules, but what you do to discourage that is have extreme measures for punishment. That, hey, you know, we go to a pot tagging program, when you break the rules, you get kicked out for life. So, I mean, there's got to be some pretty extreme measures to get people's attention to take it seriously. And the people that want to flirt with breaking the rules need to understand that they're flirting with their own livelihood, and it could be long-term ramifications if they get caught doing something wrong. So I think that we really need to look at a tagging program. Number two is we recommend increasing harvest reporting accountability by modernizing the VMRC online harvest reporting system so it's more compatible to mobile electronic devices. And, you know, I brought it up again Sunday at the meeting that I don't know why the dealers aren't mandatorily reporting now, but one of the dealers in our meeting that agreed a year ago it was important, we need to do it, he started jumping up and down about the cost of his staff having to do that. So I've even seen a reversal on crab buyers and that are on our panel. But I think it's a necessity. You know, it's been in place in the federal fishery buyers in Virginia for quite a long time. The safest system works very well. If you have all your numbers extrapolated into totals, I think they could actually report on the electronic system that's available today. And I'm talking about dealers, probably in less than 10 minutes a week. So, you know, we do it, and we have sold quite a few thousand pounds at times. It just doesn't take that long. And so I do believe that that kind of directive really is going to have to come from staff more than in the industry panel. And the fishery management process, we're really looking at mortality, and that's in the peeler pot industry. There's evidence that suggests significant mortality associated with the harvest of crabs during the shedding process. Invasive predation, that's something that we all know about and we've talked about. Particularly, I think these blue catfish are the ones that are worse now. I don't know if we can prevent red puppy drum or speckled trout. We hope they come in here for recreational fisheries. I don't think we can prevent that, but I think this blue catfish problem is pretty bad. And I think in Maryland, I wish Virginia, and I know it's not this commission, I guess it's Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, but I really wish it was under the VMRC's jurisdiction and not Department of Game and Inland Fisheries, because I think y'all would take a different approach. In Maryland, if you catch a blue catfish, it's actually illegal to put him back, and there's a $1,000 fine. And in this state, it's still fostered as a, you know, a great recreational fishery. And I think that's wonderful that you can get your picture taken to share on Facebook with a 100-pound catfish, but I'm not sure that if it's decimating the entire crab population, that the value to the community or the state of Virginia is in the proper perspective there, you know, if it's really hurting crab population. And we're looking at studying the cost benefits of blue crab regulations, more or less looking at catch per unit effort and both the present and potential future regulations, and assess the impacts as required by code to kind of understand the economics. And the economics of this important fishery is critical to proper management of the fishery, and more of commercial watermen participate in the blue crab fishery than any other Virginia fishery. And a fishery that's economically sound is always going to be one that's sustainably managed. And that's one thing that was amazing. We have a Dr. Ward that comes to all of our panel meetings, and he gave us a demonstration one day about catch per unit effort and economic sustainability. And it was odd to find out that when you achieved economic sustainability and a high catch per unit effort in a fishery, that you automatically obtained it scientifically at the same time without even watching the scientific side of it. So if you regulated crab potters to where individual crab potters, let's say the big crab potters, and Rob said again, they're, you know, what is that definition of a full-time crab potter? You know, is he a guy that's more than 150 days? Is it the size of his rig? Is it his catch? I think there are conversations that will have to be dealt with sometime in the future in management. But, you know, there are things we need to look at together. And I appreciate the commission's time. I know I'm not really speaking on what the agenda is here today. So, like I said, I'm more speaking to the future of crab management, and really like the commission to talk to staff and talk to the scientific community and talk about this pilot program and see if maybe we can have a subcommittee process or something to be, at least begin to lay some type of foundation for future style management. And this pilot would be the basis to look at an example of an output style fishery and how it would work. Any questions?
Any questions to Mr. Mullen?
Okay. And I do want to say this about Tangier. I'm working very hard now to name a panel member from Tangier. I do talk to Dan Dyes and Freddie Wheatley, and Tangier is abreast of the panel progress and what's going on. And we got the largest reaction from Tangier the night we started our subcommittee project on reopening the crab dredge fishery. We had a tremendous amount of interest from Tangier, and we probably had half of Tangier Island on the telephone with us, and they did participate directly during that entire process. So I think Tangier has us blipping on the radar, and when they really think we're getting ready to do something important, they all jump on the ship, and we hear from them. So I just want to tell you all that. We're outreaching to Tangier, and I'm going to make a trip up there myself in person probably in the next few months to visit with people on the island and encourage ways to participate with Tangier in this process in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Anyone else? No one else? Mr. Graham.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Bull and fellow commissioners. My name is Johnny Graham. I am one of three siblings who own and operate Graham and Rollins Crab Processing Facility, the last crab processing facility remaining in Hampton. Back in the early 1900s, you know, Hampton was labeled Crab Town USA.
In 1973, when my father retired from NASA and took over the family business upon my grandfather's sudden death, there were 13 crab processing plants in Hampton and over 100 in the Commonwealth. Today, we have less than five, which of the five, most of them do not have substantial capability of production. This scenario is not just found in Virginia, but everywhere else in the country where crabs are harvested and once processed. Domestic crab meat production is less than 5% of what it once was and represents a fraction of a percent of the total crab meat consumed in this country. The crab picking industry, as we once knew, has perished. Today, like many days this year and last, my plant is not producing crab meat. Dozens of workers will remain at home, unable to work. Calls from customers wishing to buy fresh crab meat will be answered with a disheartening reply and a follow-up question, well, when will you have any? Maybe in a couple days is our response, but rest assured, this is with much uncertainty. Safeway, Wegmans, Kroger, ShopRite, these are just a few of our longstanding retail customers that are now gone. They are gone because we are no longer able to provide the product they seek. They have sought other supply from multiple sources in countries of different origin in the absence of domestic product. Simply put, this is the definition of supply and demand. Today, we are confronted yet again with the task of addressing our crisis within the blue crab fishery. We know now the fishery is not overfished, but depleted. This means the resource has been used up. To me, that means they've been caught up, eaten up, eliminated to the point whereas we as vested stakeholders in this industry need to protect what's left to ensure they, the blue crabs, can sustain their very existence. This sounds like a very similar theme that we have revisited time and time again now for 20-plus years. I would like to reflect on what has been done over the last 20 years to address the alarming downward trends of this fishery. In October of 1994, we expanded a spawning sanctuary in the bay, 146 square miles. At that time, it was only 75 square miles. No crab harvesting within the sanctuary from June 1 to September 15th. We closed down the Hampton Roads area for crab dredging. This was a 1,450 acre area. We shortened the crab pot season from April 1 to November 30th. We required two escape rings and commercial and recreational crab pots to increase spawning potential and reduce waste. We required four call rings at each peeler pound that allows escapement of small peeler crabs. We capped the number of peeler pot licenses to prevent expansion into the fishery. We limited the crab dredge size to 8 feet to prevent increase in effort. In 1996, we prohibited the possession of dark-colored sponge crabs with a 10 sponge crab bushel tolerance per day. We limited licenses of the sales of hard crab licenses based on previous eligibility and exemption requirements. We established a 300 hard crab pot limit for all Virginia tributaries and mainstream Chesapeake Bay. We established a 3.5-inch minimum possession size law for all soft crabs. In 1999 and 2000, we lowered the maximum limit of peeler pots from 400 to 300. We initiated a moratorium on additional commercial licenses for all commercial crabbing gear. We established a larger spawning sanctuary effective June 1 through September 15th, and this was an additional 430 square miles. In 2003, we enacted an 8-hour workday for commercial crabbers. This replaced the closure on Wednesday, which was put in place in 2001. We established a 3-inch minimum size limit for peeler crabs. We reduced the winter dredge fishery from 20 barrels at that time to 17. We augmented the Virginia Blue Crab Sanctuary another 272 square miles to follow the 25-foot contour, the bay depth in the water of that area. Now the sanctuary is 927 square miles, where it once was 75 square miles. We also reduced unlicensed recreational harvest limits from one bushel of crabs and two bushes, two dozens of peelers. And we also reduced the licensed recreational harvester limit to one bushel of crabs and two dozen peelers. In 2008, after not realizing the intended results from this 20-point plan, our governors of Virginia and Maryland got together and agreed to another 34% female harvest reduction. This was achieved by reducing pot limits yet again across all categories, reducing the limits of harvest only on adult females, and most notably ending the 100-year-old crab dredge fishery. This fishery targeted mostly adult female crabs. We also spent several millions of dollars of NOAA's money buying up active licenses for willing and wanting participants to be bought out of the fishery. Now I want to turn the attention to a graph, which I hope Joe has sitting by, which indicates the landings from all the other competing states whom also participate in this fishery. Now, we've got Delaware, New Jersey, South Carolina, or North Carolina, and Georgia, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm looking on that chart, and I see a lot of correlations and a lot of similarities that are happening across the board, across all these jurisdictions. And what I'm trying to convey here is Maryland and Virginia have done all these things that I've just mentioned, all of these things trying to remedy our downward trends. All these other states have done nothing. They've done nothing. They didn't put pot limits in. They didn't establish sanctuaries. They didn't have curfews. They didn't do anything. Certainly someone has to show me somewhere on that graph where our efforts that we've done has deviated somewhere differently from what everybody else is trending there. Can anybody show me where we did something that somebody else didn't and we improved our situation by doing it? Okay, we actually went down. We've gone down doing the work we're doing. So, it doesn't take a Philadelphia lawyer to make this presentation. This is what we've done. This is what others have done. This is what's been realized. Surely, again, after enacting all these regulations, we would conclude that this Chesapeake Bay resource would have some kind of deviation. There'd be something conveyed there that we've done something in the right manner to correct our trend. Okay, Virginia's going down. So these other states have done nothing, where we've been regulating with a lot of rigor. What am I suggesting? Are we regulating ourselves out of the business to no avail? Are we reacting to the situation, which obviously all attempts to correct or change are not working? Are we addressing the real problem? Do we really know what the problem really is? Everyone in this room has their own opinion to each of these questions. If you took a poll, I guarantee you there'd be no consensus amongst this group within this room. What I do want to convey to the commission is the fact that we are living in a changing time. Everything within reach in today's global environment, specifically crabs and crab meat, are commodities that are traded up and down the entire East Coast and Gulf. I am currently purchasing fresh crab meat from Colombia, South America, Nicaragua, and Central America, Mexico, both in the Gulf and Baja regions. Crab meat arrives from these countries within 36 hours after being picked. In a similar fashion, crabs caught in the Gulf region are often flown or trucked within a day's time to the market in Jessup or Baltimore. My point is prudent. It is prudent to manage this fishery with an eye on what other participating states jurisdictions are doing within the area of keeping the playing field level. We don't want to box ourselves into a situation which will result in damaging implications when things become stable or normal. Virginia has been working, overtime to correct this fishery to no avail, while other states have taken little or no action. North Carolina which shares our border, has no pot limits. They have no catch limits. Their crab landings have been greater than Virginia and Maryland's combined at times. They can dump crabs into the marketplace and abruptly change the price of crabs in Virginia immediately. The most recent example of this, and some crabbers in this room may attest to this, was over the Memorial Day weekend, not too far away. Crabs showed up overnight in several localities in North Carolina in the middle of a holiday weekend, no less. The price of male crabs across the board was lowered as much as $60 a bushel in a day. The catches in Virginia and Maryland did not reflect that. In fact, the catches remained the same. But yet, that spike in influx of crabs resulted in lower price per bushel in Virginia and Maryland. And hasn't rebounded. Although the catch here in Virginia and Maryland has stayed the same, the prices have not rebounded to what they were. The Gulf region hits crabs all of a sudden, and buyers want to buy crab meat for $3 a pound. This situation happens in the crab meat industry as well. The crab meat will show up from somewhere, and all of a sudden, my buyers are looking at me, why are you asking $3 more than the competitor? It happens overnight. Venezuela goes into conservation period for 45 days, commencing in the middle of August and lasting through September. Almost like clockwork, domestic crab meat producers can look for a $2 a pound average price reduction on crab meat produced within the first week of September because they've come back online. That's how it reacts. That's how it responds. The 10% reduction we are contemplating today in all likelihood will not hurt anybody drastically. The economics of this fishery have done most of the damage. I've already had three crabbers quit this year because they just can't make it. I hear similar stories from around the bay, both Virginia and Maryland. Economics will always dictate this situation. If you can't make it, you will get out and find other means of income. Bills have to be paid. Income has to be derived by some other means. Desperate times bring out desperate measures amongst all. In addition to the meat, I'm already bringing in from outside the country. I've just recently returned from the Baja coast of Mexico looking at crab meat opportunities. In less than 2 weeks, I'm planning a trip to Bangladesh. Packers like myself in our country are buying foreign crab meat from third parties right now, third world countries, and bringing in crab meat and dumping it into their own containers and calling it product of the USA. It's happening because it's desperate out there. And people will do whatever it takes to pay a bill, to stay in existence. This is economic fraud. It's punishable with jail time. Herein lies the problem. The crab industry is in huge crisis. What do we do? The first thing that has to be done, in my opinion, is we have to get a handle on the effort. We all know a considerable amount of crabbers are fishing much more gear than is permitted. Why? Because there's no enforcement. There's no way to monitor. There's no way of enforcement. If there's no fear of suffering from the repercussions of being caught, why not put more pots in the water? The guy next to me is doing it. I'm going to do it too. That's the attitude. That's the thing. It's not just in Virginia. It's in Maryland. North Carolina is allowed. It's going on everywhere. You all could have taken it just as easily, taken the approach of reducing the effort by 10% to accomplish the goal today. But yet you know by reducing 10% of the pots from the water is not a plausible thing. You're not going to get 10% out of the water. So you're going to go right to the guy's pocketbook and take 10% out of his catch, which you can somewhat manage, but I would beg to differ, because if there's a will and a way and intent, they will find a way to get those crabs into the market. We must get a handle on the effort, and at the same time, we must get a better handle on the catch. If you don't have those two variables under control, how in the world can we sit in this room and make a decision? How in the world can we make prudent management decisions if we don't know how much gear is in the water and what's being taken from year after year? You know, I don't like the IRS to know what my business is, just like the crabbers don't want to know what everybody else's business is. But we are in a crisis. We've got to get a handle on things. It's time to start managing other aspects of the life cycle and stages, sex and maturity, rather than just these adult females. By and large, hands down, the majority of the things that we've done in 20 years has been put more females back in the water. Put them back in the water. And that has been our premise. And our logic in that, by golly, we've got to have more eggs in the water. It's going to result in more juveniles and more crabs, and everything's going to be peachy keen. It's not working. We need to turn over another leaf, start looking in other directions, in other areas for our management. Putting females back in the water has not worked for 20 years. Putting a 10% reduction today is not going to change anything. In my opinion, it's not going to change anything. The dynamics of our fishery have changed. Our fishery is like the other states in that the demand for the male crab is constant. It's constant. The male demands a premium. He's sought after everywhere. Where is the protection for the male? Why aren't we adopting sanctuary management regimes for the male, for the juvenile? We've done it. We've done it for the female crab. We know where those adult female crabs are. We know where the egg-bearing females are. We've seen it on the grass. We've protected our area of a sanctuary. Well, we also know where the males are. We also know where the juveniles are. We've created more pressure by putting the restrictions in the bay on the bay watermen, whereas they've been forced to go into the rivers and forced to go fish for juveniles and for peelers and for males because of our actions here. We may have to come back and peel back some of those rules that we put on those and relieve some of the pressure out of those rivers, where, in my opinion, a lot of the damage is being done. And I draw that conclusion based on what's being experienced across this whole industry, not just in Virginia. There's no crabs in the Gulf. There's no crabs anywhere. What is common amongst all of us? Do we all have predation? Yeah, no. Do we all share the same water? Yeah, no. Are our fishing techniques the same? Are the tactics the same? Is the demand across the board for each individual type of crab and sex and animal the same? It is. People are leaving the bay. Dead rise is not a commonplace fixture for catching crabs anymore. It's an ACS. Hasn't always been that way. It's changed. The demand for the male is more so now than ever before, and that's where the effort is. We're not catching males in the middle of the bay. You're catching them in the creeks and the rivers. Okay? So I don't know if shallow water sanctuary is the answer. I don't know if creating a law that says you can't place a water, whereas in mean low water, the crab pot's exposed, it's unlawful to put it there. I don't know what the measures are, but there needs to be something addressed in the rivers and tributaries to protect another aspect of the life cycle of this animal. We can't put all of our eggs in the basket of putting more females back in the water is going to take care of it, because it hasn't proven to work, and I don't think it's going to work this go around either. I appreciate your time. I'll take care of any questions that you may have of me. I'm very, very passionate about this fishery, but we are at a critical stage. My company right now is negotiating to get out of the business. We are moving abroad because there is absolutely no future left in us as far as I can see it. None. And it will rebound overnight. It'll happen just like that. But the dynamics and the fishery is going to be changed all over again. And I don't think I'm going to see it in my lifetime come back to what it was in terms of the chemistry of the industry. The picking houses are folding up shop. We have labor problems. We've got to deal with importation. We've got the Affordable Health Care Act that we've got to deal with here coming up shortly for those of us that have a large amount of employees. Just a lot of issues that just don't work in our favor.
Any questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Grant. Anyone else? Well, the public hearing is closed here, and the matter is before the commission. Chief, you anything to add?
No, I mean, I have heard a lot of this, and it's relevant. I think it's just difficult to encompass for what we're doing. That's why I put this slide up here for the commission. We are faced with a requirement, regardless of whether environmental, fishing, whatever it may be. And how do we go about that? And this is what we started back on April 28th, I think it was, or maybe April 30th when the jurisdictions met. So I think nothing's changed from the staff viewpoint. I think I understand the passion because we're part of it too. We, you know, we're part of the process as well. So I understand what Johnny is talking about. I can understand the frustration of others. I can understand the long-term vision. I think in all of this, though, what staff feels is that if we go forward, and we do wish there had been output controls years ago, staff had to live through that 21-point plan. But industry came to us in 1994 and 1996 to the point where we had a virtual town hall meeting over at Warwick High School and sat down and everyone was party to what was going on. After that, different things such as bi-state Blue Crab Committee, governors, all sorts of things happened after that. So output controls are the future. Staff hopes that when that happens that we make sure that we don't repeat what happened with striped bass, where for at least 10 years there were a lot of upset people out there for not being part of a limited entry system. And that's what we're facing when we go forward with output controls, a true limited entry system. So that has to be something that we take care of. And the other thing that staff is interested in and mentioned at the Crab Management Advisory Committee, and I think was taken the wrong way, but, you know, we have an obligation to get information out to as many in the crab industry as possible, both commercial and recreational. And to get that information out there before we get to 2018. So I would not even think of counterpointing anything that's been said to you. I think it's all part of the value of what people hold for this fishery, for the resource, and I think it's important.
Thank you, Chief. Any questions? Mr. Erskine.
Thank you, Commissioner. I don't know that it's necessarily a question, but I just wanted to maybe make a comment that I appreciate all the public comments. There's a lot of passion out there in this industry. I appreciate staff's hard work and VIM's advisory role as well. Unfortunately, I think we're in a specific situation here addressing this 10% reduction, which I personally find a little bit arbitrary, but it's clear that some of these alternatives that have been mentioned, whether a pilot program or maybe sanctuaries up in the tributaries or a new alternative about maybe protecting the male crab versus all these regulations for female protection are very good management tools that should be looked into. You know, I've listened as best I can to all these comments, and I've written down at least five, maybe six research studies that people have brought out. Mortality, pilot program, cost benefit, predation, an additional survey to ground truth the winter dredge survey. There's a lot of research that needs to be done, and this fishery, as we all recall, was declared a federal disaster, and there were millions of dollars that were brought into the state to research a lot of this and get answers, and we're probably worse off now than we were in 2008, and it's frustrating because we shouldn't be in this position, in my opinion. I understand the environmental variability surrounding this, but to not have a handle on predation or discard mortality or things like that, I think is unfortunate and really inexcusable. So I understand we're not at that point when I'm making a decision here at the commission about that. We're talking about a very specific option, but I think. If there's an opportunity for some of that disaster funding to go towards some of these questions that industry has that's driven by either an industry panel or CMAQ or staff or the commission, you know, we should move towards that and get some of these answers. Thank you.
Chief?
Yes, for Mr. Erskine, it would have been great if that was the design of the $15 million disaster relief What the design was, though, was to have crabbers be able to do other things, such as oystering, the cage culture oyster, the spat on shell oyster. Most of the emphasis of that money, other than the buyback, was towards making sure there were other things for crabbers to do and to take some of the pressure off the crab resource. So we would need, you know, it's not that anyone was at that time negligent in not saying, here's what we need to research. It's more that we're more or less told, well, here's where the money goes. And it's a good idea because a lot of those projects have turned out very well, as you know, especially with oysters. So we need something a little bit more to get involved in the good ideas that you brought out, especially it's really something staff worries about is the discard mortality, such as was done for the winter dredge fishery. I mean, for the other fisheries, there's a lot about the peeler fishery that needs to be researched. There's more that needs to be researched, as you heard today, about the sponge crab. So I agree with you. I'm just trying to let you know that we didn't have a whole lot of choice.
Mr. Commissioner, I completely understand, you know, that there were some limitations maybe to that available funding. But there was also Ghost Pot, you know, program that I'm not sure was effective, and some other things that, you know, may not have been used appropriately. I think these are directed specific research questions that maybe we were limited in our capacity at the time, unfortunately, but, you know, really need to be addressed in the future. And it's unfortunate that we can't do it now.
Dr. Neal.
Your option three, which came out of CMAQ and the staff recommendation, basically that is for this July to July.
Yes.
And so the Seafood Council is asking for us the sunset date of July. It's already a sunset date.
Yes.
So we don't have to do a specific thing for that. We'll have to revisit this next year anyway.
That's correct.
And then also was my, you know, at the CMAQ meeting I was at, it was my understanding that staff has every intention of working with these industry groups to looking at different management possibilities in the future. We have a request to make a motion to ask staff to, but I mean, we're already looking in that direction.
Well, I think there are questions out there as to what role CMAQ is playing versus the industry panel, and I think that probably has to be addressed at some time. Not today, I wouldn't think. There is overlap between members of the industry panel and CMAQ. Staff had always thought from the beginning in June of 2012 when the industry panel was designed that CMAQ would be the clearinghouse because CMAQ is the commission's advisory committee. I think that's been sort of not fulfilled situation as far as that goes, but I don't think that's the fault of anyone. I think that's just sort of been, you have two groups. Ostensibly, the industry panel is working on a long-term vision, an approach for the future. That's why you hear pilot program. That's why you hear accountability, the things they really have worked on. CMAQ has been a short-term situation. Each year, it seems, but it's really not each year, but 2008 most notably, and this year, CMAQ has had to address short-term management problems. So I think there does need to be sort of a meeting of the mind somewhere, and I would suggest that that be something the commissioner is going to have to look into to figure out how that goes. The end result should always be that the commission has the best advice possible from any committees or from staff. So we probably need to do that. I heard suggestions today that staff would work on certain things or work with the panel, and I know staff works for CMAQ, so we have a little bit to do to get that all straightened up, and it's only been 2 years with the panel.
I guess I'm highly encouraged that I am hearing industry really wanting to take this bull by the horns and to do things to manage its fishery. And some of the ideas that they're coming out with sound very good, and obviously we can't do that today. And but I would like to see some direction, but it's going to take BMRC, it's going to take industry, and it's going to take the VIMS scientists working together to come up with how these things are going to work. But it is going to be a long-term thing.
I agree, and I think now that we know we're going to move towards 2018, short-term is probably not going to help that. We're going to need to address some of the longer term, which is only 3.5 years maybe. But we're so I agree.
It's not going to be easy. I mean, I hear Crabber saying we're not doing near enough, and yep. Others saying don't do anything. And so there's a wide divergence of opinion. But I guess I've heard more aggressive stance from industry to do more to help the crab populations than I've ever heard. And
since it's only been 2 years, the only staff thought on that is everyone would like to see that more widespread. And I don't think that's been for a lack of trying. The panel's been to Pocosin for a meeting. I think they went to Tangier for a meeting. Did you go to Tangier for a meeting? No. Okay. Okay. I hear the SA did. So that's the idea. That's very similar to what staff was saying earlier, that when we get ready to take a change, I mean a big change, then you want to, at the minimum, have everyone possible informed, and at the most, have a majority agreement. But you can take everyone informed because then they can say, they told us. And that's what's going to happen from now until 2018, I suspect. This is a tall order, and I'm not going to go into it today because staff will go into it with the commission as we go along about the challenges we face with allocation. Staff's only premise right now about allocation is there should not be a loser and a winner among the bay jurisdictions. So,
other comments from the commission?
Another question.
Yes, Andy.
Active licenses May of last year versus May of this year. I'm back to lack of effort. We heard from Mr. Graham that he lost four buyers and or four crabbers, and that's what I'm hearing from all the buyers. Isn't the lack of effort already absorbing some of this 10% reduction? Isn't the industry already?
No, because, well, first of all, let me think about how I want to answer that. First of all, remember the main objective here. The main objective is spawners. That's the main objective, but there has to be a way to do that. The effort, as Mr. Graham was saying, it would be nice to think that we could take a 10% cut from effort, but we know that that's not practical because of what's going on out there. When you have reduced effort, the one thing about those graphs that Joe Cimino put up and Mr. Graham, we are a state and Maryland, that actually went up before we came down. We went up in 2009, 10, and 11, and then we came down. So the catch per unit effort that I showed the commission earlier shows that despite the lower effort, in recent years, the extraction of harvest is even better than before. So I don't think there's any absorption from what already happened. I think the problem is that we have the current list of active licensees. They are projected to have a certain harvest through the bushel limits, and then you project to take the 10% reduction. And the one thing that a conversation from CMAQ the other night, and you did a great job chairing it, by the way, but the conversation from CMAQ was, well, if you do have a lower bushel limit, then no matter what happens, the harvesters are going to try to get to that bushel limit. There is savings compared to a higher bushel limit. It would be a stretch to think we could go beyond that.
Anyone else? Well, I've got a couple things in mind I think I'll say. I hear everyone's frustration with this. I think everyone here is as frustrated as everyone else. I think everyone out there in the crabbing industry is as frustrated as we are. We don't like being in this position. Nobody likes being in this position. This isn't anybody's fault. Harvesters haven't over-harvested. The management plan has been effective. It has curtailed the harvest much less than it used to. We're below the target rate, and we're routinely below the target rate over the last 6 years. That's progress. But we can't control a lot of things that impact this stock. We can't control hungry big fish. We can't control the growth of underwater grasses. We can't control the dead zones. These are things that impact the stock's overall abundance as much as anything else. Whether we like it or not, this is where we are. We got a state law that says that we have to address a depleted status of this stock. We have to do something, in my mind. And frankly, I want to do something, because I'm not willing to sit here and roll the dice and take the chance that somehow this miraculously just turns around. And maybe it does. But if it doesn't, and it gets worse, everybody will be in here next year pointing at us for not doing anything. I'm not willing to take the risk. So what we have here is a little bit different than we do normally. This is not looking at it from a calendar year to calendar year basis. This is not looking at it as an annual crop. It's focused more on juveniles that we see now that will be spawners next year. And that, to me, is the way to really get us into a much better position down the road. So I like staff's option three. And I like that CMAQ endorsed it and, in fact, voted for it fairly significant by significant margins. It's encouraging to have all the input that we've had from a variety of different people. I like that the industry panel is looking long-term, but the devil's in the details. So these are things that we need to work together on and that we probably need to work together in closer conjunction with CMAQ. That's down the road. What we have here today is something that we have to address now. Whether we like it or not, this is the hand that was dealt with us, dealt for us. This is what we need to do. So, anybody else have a comment? Well, it matters before, Mr. Close.
Yeah, I just want to make one more comment. You know, I just look at this as, and I'm sorry to say it, but I'm just going to have to say it anyway. You know, if the bushel limits came out and they were right where they were supposed to be, we wouldn't be in this problem. And I understand everybody's fishing a lot more pots than what we have, than what it is. But when you break it down to biomass, it's just big enough for everything to go around. Okay, how many pots you put in the water, what you do. And I understand we have to do something here today. But if we don't take a different approach to this, and very soon, we'll be here next year, and we'll be here the following year. That's something I can assure you. Got no more to say on that.
Thank you. Any other comments? If not, the commission operates on motions.
I'll make a motion to approve option three today.
Dr. Neal motions to approve option three. That would also include the staff recommendation for the closing of the winter dredge fishery.
Yeah, so I guess my motion would be to approve staff recommendation.
Motion to approve staff recommendation. Is there a second? Is there a second?
Somebody.
Second by Mr. Tankard.
Yeah.
Any discussion on that?
Well, my discussion is long term. I really think we need to look at where industries, what's being said here, I think, is where we're going and where we're going to need to go. But today we got to do something.
Okay. We have a motion to second to adopt option three here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Nope. Negative vote by Mr. Close.
Two.
And Ms. Haney. And the chair votes aye. The motion passes 4-2.